नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स। नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स। नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स। बुद्धं धम्मं संघं नमस्सामि। So today we had a bit of a look at the hindrances, the five hindrances. These experiences that kind of trip us up, block the way to clear understanding, confuse us, cause problems. And my interest with these hindrances is always to figure out how to turn them to our advantage. How can we learn from them? How can we use them to further our practice rather than to trip us up and lead us in the wrong direction? So that's why I like to talk about them, just so that we can begin to recognize when one or other of them is manifesting. And both before I offered that reflection and since then, there've been quite a number of questions, comments about how we deal with negative thinking. It's obviously something that is quite prevalent, that people have recognized in their practices, in their practice. And so I thought this evening maybe to talk a little bit about that. And to share some reflections, some ways of approaching, considering this particular experience. There's a verse in the Dhammapada that I often like to reflect on. Some of you, I'm sure, are familiar with it, where the Buddha says that hatred never ceases by hatred, but only by love. This is a universal law. And one might think, wow, what a pity a few more people aren't aware of this. We could save an enormous amount of suffering if we adopted a different approach to resolving conflict, resolving difficulties. It's interesting, I'm reading a book at the moment by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and he's saying how it's actually imperative that we find alternative ways of dealing with problems between different groups of people. Up until now, violence seems to have been the way that people have opted for, kind of caveman mentality. You just take out your clubs and hit them over the head, and hopefully that'll solve it. But clearly, given the proliferation of technology in the realm of like military equipment, it's becoming more and more dangerous, this way of trying to resolve difficulties. And I was interested that His Holiness said, really, the only way is by cooperation, by negotiation, just approaching problems from a very, very different way. It's actually asking an enormous amount of people to even consider such an approach. demanding a kind of inner work, because, you know, in some ways there's an enormous ego gratification, both at a, well, I'm imagining it in this, between nations, but more relevantly for us, in individual conflicts, difficulties, one can get quite a buzz from being right and proving that we're right and winning an argument or a debate. There's a lot of ego gratification in that. And it can be quite fun. I was talking with some people today about how the kind of sense of being that can arise from having a cause, being right, the sense of righteous indignation that knows it's right and is jolly well going to show the other person that it's right. And in some ways this is what the world recognizes and supports. There's not so much emphasis on negotiation, on the idea of a kind of a win-win situation. As things go now, generally it's everybody loses. Like the losers obviously lose, but the aggressors lose as well in terms of the harm that is done. Individuals who go to fight wars, and many are killed and many come back severely traumatized, both mentally but also physically, horrible, dreadful injuries, people's lives really very, very severely affected by these conflicts. Everybody's lives are touched. Everybody knows somebody who's been involved in these wars. So it's really important that we understand this hatred as it manifests in our own hearts, because only when we can understand this are we in any position to promote, to suggest, to insist that the leaders of the world, that the nations adopt a different attitude to war. And I remember years ago being very struck, because I kind of always felt that peace was a good thing. I always felt that it was good to ban the bomb, these kind of things. And I would hear people talking about it, these movements to promote peace. But I never actually really felt very peaceful at these meetings. I never really felt that the people who were promoting peace were very peaceful. They said things that sounded good, that I could agree with, but the whole atmosphere around those kind of situations left me feeling very confused and disturbed. I realized that those people hadn't actually really learnt about peace within their own hearts. So my sense is that actually what we're doing here is tremendously important in this regard. And one of the things that has come to me in like contemplating these situations and contemplating my own life, my own practice, is that you know, one hears of atrocities, one hears of all kinds of foolishness that human beings get up to. You know, when I hear these things, and having practiced for a great many years, and many of them in monastic life, I can actually understand completely. Because I've experienced the same kind of energies within my own heart. You know, I know what it's like to hate somebody. I know what it's like to rather wish that somebody didn't exist. I mean, you might find this shocking. But this is something that, you know, I experience, you know, quite, you know, it's not a rare occurrence. to experience, you know, a lot of negativity, hostility towards my fellow human beings, even towards my dear fellow sisters, it can arise, which, I mean, might be even more shocking to you. these things happen. We're not always going to agree. We're not always going to love each other. I mean, deep down, there's a sense of love and fellowship and sisterhood, and you know, sharing our life, sharing our humanity. But there are, you know, often extremely strong feelings can arise in relation to one another. So one might sort of say, well, you know, what about right intention? Like those of you who are familiar with the Eightfold Path, and I spoke about it briefly the other evening, so right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. You know, right intention. Well, where does murderous rage fit into right intention? reasonable question. You know. So, I've gone quiet because I know the answer, but I'm just trying to find the way of putting it that will help to make it clear. Because for me, I care about this so much. It feels so important. And I'd like to find a way of expressing it that makes sense to everybody. I think I'm going to have to kind of lead into it in a kind of indirect way. And maybe just to look at our practice as the intention to actually learn about our humanity. And I speak quite often about the epithet of the Buddha, Lokawidu, one who knows the worlds. You know, one who understands completely the human predicament. And I may also have spoken about just how fortunate it is to be born as a human being, because not only do we have the capacity to reflect on our experience I talk about having the intelligence, the this capacity to reflect, which is like a quality of the Devadas, that they have reflective minds, but we also have animal bodies. These bodies are animal bodies. We share this with the animal kingdom. But because we have the capacity to reflect, we can consider and contemplate just our animal nature. Animals live in a realm of fear, a realm of that's very concerned about survival, physical survival. Now, animals have mortal bodies, flesh and blood bodies, just like us. You know, if you look at a pig, actually, it's quite alarming to see how similar it is. Just the appearance of, you know, it's actually quite similar to, you know, certain parts of our bodies. You know, it's kind of pinkish and hairy, and oh my goodness. So we do share a lot with the animal kingdom. And if you look at animals, you see that there's a tremendous amount of fear and the survival instinct is very strong. Some animals survive by running away, hiding. So if you watch rabbits, you know, they have these ears that kind of flicker around to kind of pick up any sound that might suggest danger. And if they, you know, sense, and they've got these noses that kind of twitch, so they pick up sense of something that is dangerous. And if they feel afraid, then they run away, disappear into a hole somewhere. Other animals attack. You know, if they feel threatened, then they attack. And or they attack because they need to eat. I remember being very impressed one time. We used to have a very large tomcat when we first lived at Chithurst. His name was George. And actually, I often talk about George because I think if it hadn't been for George, none of us would be here. Because George was a very wonderful friend and companion to us. He was big. He could absorb any amount of affection. And so we used to, you know, when things were really desperate, we would pick him up and just, you know, hug him. we couldn't hug anybody else, really, so we'd hug George. So that was fine, you know. George got on very well with the nuns. But if you were a rabbit, meeting George was a very different experience. And one time I was walking down the lane at Chithurst. I mean, many of you know the lane at Chithurst. It's a narrow lane, and I could see George coming towards me. And I knew that a rabbit had just crossed the road behind. And I thought, oh. And I just walked. I didn't look back. It was very quick. And before long, George was walking past with a dead rabbit. So this ability to attack and to kill is very much part of animal life. Whether it's attacking to kill to eat something, to get something to eat, or attacking to kill as a matter of survival. So whether defense or just to get something. So some people think, you know, the animal world, you know, nature, oh, isn't it lovely? I remember Ajahn Sumedha talking one time about, you know, in the forest at night at Chithurst, you know, you're always hearing animals, you know, screaming out, either being attacked or about to attack. This is the animal world and the world that we're part of. These are animal bodies. And so there is a very powerful aggressive instinct that we share as human beings. Of course, you know, not you know, we're no longer living in caves and having to hunt and kill animals for survival in that way, but the survival instinct is still there. And so we in our case, it's more like survival of the ego. And we've talked about self and not self, and we've talked about how self is kind of a construct. You know, that ultimately there isn't a self, but self is a kind of created thing. It's something that's being conditioned into us, and it's very powerful. You know, and sometimes we can think that we're actually very sweet, very placid. I used to think I was very sweet, very placid. And people would say, oh yes, she's so placid. And it was only when I became a nun that I realized that I wasn't. Because living in community, and living in renunciant community, where we don't have very many ways of expressing ourselves. You know, we don't have many ways that we can kind of exert our authority, our power. And so it comes down to it can be over very trivial things. And, you know, it can be rather humiliating, actually, the kind of things we can get upset about. I might have spoken about this before, because I often speak about this, because it's actually, I think it's really important that we take this on board as part of our humanity. You know, so we can get really upset. I mean, I remember getting really upset when, like, at the beginning, there were just four of us, and we were all very strong individuals, and we all had our own ways of doing things, very definitely. And I remember Ajahn Sundara telling me how to chop carrots. I was not happy with her suggestion. And it's a jolly good thing that we all had the eight precepts as a kind of protection, otherwise terrible things might have happened in the kitchen at Chittest. In those days, we didn't have, we weren't very well supported. We didn't have many ingredients to cook with, and we were the main ones who were cooking. So, you know, if you went into the larder the evening before you were going to cook, and if you had any ideas about what you were going to cook, that was a kind of very dangerous situation, because if there was one block of cheese, then, you know, you might have an idea about it, and somebody else might also have an idea about it. And, yeah, so there was a lot of letting go practice that needed to happen. And sometimes, because in those days we weren't so skilled in letting go, you know, sometimes it was we'd have difficult moments, put it like that. I remember sometimes when I was, you know, doing something else, you know, we weren't cooking every day. We took turns. And I remember one time, you know, one of the monks coming and sort of saying, well, sister, I think you better come to the kitchen. And so sometimes I'd get called into the kitchen to resolve some kind of difficulty that was happening in there. But fortunately, you know, I talked last night about no longer living according to worldly aims and values. Fortunately, our practice was about understanding our human predicament, not judging or blaming or criticizing, but understanding. Really investigating those energies as they arose. And not thinking, I'm a terrible person for feeling this. My goodness, you know, I thought I was supposed to be sweet and kind and lovely because I'm a nun now. But more, I've gone beyond worldly aims and values. These are things I need to investigate. These are things I need to understand. And it's the same for all of us during this retreat, because, you know, you're all of you living, you know, a life of renunciation for these 10 days. There are many things that you've given up. And when we give things up, you know, we can't express ourselves in this way. In fact, you can't even speak very much. You can't go and sing and dance and shout and yell and, you know, do what you're used to doing. And maybe you don't usually shout and yell anyway, but anyway, it's much more restricted. And when there are these restrictions, when we put, it's like when we put, you know, a pen around an animal, you know, at first they might be okay, they might look okay, but then they come to the edge of the pen and, you know, they can go completely wild. And it's a little bit like that when we undertake a training according to the precepts, we begin to see those energies. So, you know, as I said, before I became a nun, you know, I had lots of, lots of space to express myself. You know, there weren't people telling me what to do and how to chop carrots. I could chop carrots in my own way, and that was fine. And, you know, I used to, you know, dress how I wanted. I used to have great fun dressing and, you know, all these colors and things. It was great. And then you become a nun, and suddenly, you know, everybody wears white. That's what we wore in those days. And everybody does the same kind of thing with their hair and so on. And it's much, much more limited. So that desire to express oneself, to kind of, to express oneself, to have a place, to state one's place in the world, is much more limited. And so you begin to really see and understand, those energies. So you observe the arising of self. You know, sometimes I describe situations where maybe you're feeling very calm and peaceful and at one with the universe, and then somebody comes along and disagrees with you, and suddenly, you know, there's the arising of self. You know, and it can be quite remarkable, this kind of energy. It just sort of, you know, rises up through the body, and you want to, you know, punch them. So hearing you all laugh and respond makes me think that this is not strange territory. This is familiar territory. And so rather than, you know, hating ourselves or feeling terrible about it, let's see what we can learn. So with right intention, we acknowledge that these things are part and parcel of our humanity. And rather than hating ourselves for hating everybody else, can we replace that hatred with a sense of concern and kindliness, a sense of curiosity? This is why I feel that curiosity is such an important aspect of our practice, you know, to be interested rather than have a negative response. It's interesting that the Buddha emphasized so strongly the importance of good friends, kalyanamita, you know, good companions on our spiritual journey, because it can be very difficult. You know, if we have an idea, you know, I'm a good practicing Buddhist, so I should be peaceful. I shouldn't be attached. I should be equanimous, indifferent, serene, and whatever you want to use. And if you haven't got somebody to say, look, anger, aggression, feeling furious, feeling full of desire and lust, these are part and parcel of being a human being. It's not that you shouldn't have them, but you need to understand them. You need to understand these energies in order to harness them and use them in a skillful way. I mean, otherwise, Buddhism would be complete rubbish. You know, it would kind of produce, you know, totally bland, half-dead human beings, you know, walking around with a sort of little smile, never feeling anything, you know, never feeling love, because you shouldn't be attached, and never actually experiencing rage or hatred or any of these perfectly normal responses. But having recognized this, this is where we have to, this is where the precepts are really helpful. You know, I undertake the precept to refrain from harming any living creature. You know, it's not a small thing. So having undertaken this precept, what do we do when we feel this enormous rage? Well, it's like a furnace. It's like a fire in a furnace. You know, so we need to kind of have a very, very strong furnace, a strong container that can contain this fire. So we experience it. You know, we allow it with this sense of curiosity, this sense of kindness. You know, okay, Chandasiri, this is going on. Let's just hold it gently. Don't let's confuse things by hating ourselves for having it or feeling we shouldn't have it. Holding it gently in consciousness with a sense of respect. Okay, this is how it is right now. So this is where we begin to see where the importance of, rather than trying to make our hatred cease through hatred, how important it is to actually bring a heart of love and compassion into this being. So, you know, if this, you know, so what I've found helpful is, you know, to think about it like as a fire, to consider how harmful it can be if it gets out of control. I mean, sometimes we might find ourselves, out of control and, you know, feeling very kind of righteous that we're sorting out the whole world. And maybe we need to do this a few times. You know, really let somebody have it because they're wrong and we're right. You know, this has happened to me. I've been on the receiving end of somebody letting me have it because they thought it was important that I have a reflection and they put me right. But when we do this, how do we feel afterwards? You know, do we really feel that we've done the right thing? You know, if we sit down quietly afterwards and we've acted or spoken in anger, you know, how is it? And particularly if you know that the other person has been really hurt, damaged by our outburst. You know, how's that to feel responsible for causing somebody pain? You know, one of the things I notice if I do this, you know, when I have done it, and you know, as you practice, and probably many of you have experienced this, as you practice, you become more sensitive, and so you know, if you think you might have hurt somebody. It's almost like hurting yourself, and you'd really rather not have done it. So there can be a lot of remorse, regret, feeling terrible. But rather than getting lost in that, what can be more helpful is actually to see what we can learn from it. You know, what happened there? You know, why was I so mean to that person? You're just considering, what was it? Maybe we weren't feeling very well. Maybe they were pressing our buttons in some way. Maybe they were reminding us of something that we do that we don't really, haven't really accepted in ourselves. And that might sound a bit complicated, but I think sometimes the things that we find most difficult in other people are things that we actually find very difficult in ourselves. So actually just taking time out, you know, this is after the event, taking time out to consider, you know, what was it? You know, how come we got off balance? How come we were so aggressive, that we were so mean, that we, you know, followed that impulse to hurt? You know, sometimes as, you know, we might think that we're just setting them straight, but if we really look into our hearts, sometimes there's actually the intention to hurt, to harm. And over time, you know, sometimes we have to do it a few times. Over time, you just realize, actually, I don't want to do that anymore. When we can have the patience to bear with the sense of fire, of rage or anger, to allow it to die down, to come to a place of inner calm and balance, we're in a position to consider, well, is there something that needs to be said? You know, if something has been happening, say, in community, or if somebody has been repeatedly behaving in ways that are disruptive or confusing or upsetting to people, you know, maybe it is suitable to speak with them. And it's useful to consider the Buddha's guidelines for this, you know, because it wasn't that he said you should never say anything to anybody. Like, in fact, one of our trainings as monastics is to learn how to give each other feedback. You know, learn how to correct, you know, if somebody's not following the agreed way of behavior. You know, our duty as summoners is to find a way to help them to know about it, to learn about it. But the Buddha said that you only do this after you've considered five things. Actually, there are, in some ways there are six things. There's different ways of looking at it. One thing is to consider, well, is this something that I actually do as well? You know, if you're going to tell somebody off or offer somebody some feedback about a particular thing, just to consider, well, is this something that I do too? Because, as I said, sometimes the things that are most upsetting about other people's behavior is, it's upsetting because it's something that I do too. So you make sure that you're at least making an effort to train suitably according to whatever it is. Also to make sure that you're not coming from a place of anger or negativity. So this is where I was speaking yesterday about reading your own mind, you know, actually discerning, is there a feeling of antipathy towards this person? And if there is, okay, just wait. So you wait until there's a heart of kindness, you know, wanting the best. Choosing the right time. A suitable time, a suitable situation. Yeah, so a situation where they can give you their full attention, where they're not kind of distracted, or a time that they're not upset about something else. You know, so there's time, there's space around the situation to actually consider whatever it is you need to talk about, to talk through it together in a suitable situation. You know, so that they're at ease. I don't know if you've noticed, but if you try to talk to somebody when they're a little bit uptight, and they get defensive, it's hopeless. Because they start explaining why they did whatever it was, and they don't hear what you have to say. So people need to feel at ease if they're going to benefit from your feedback. So a heart of kindness, the right situation, making sure that you've got your facts right. You know, have you actually seen the person doing the thing that you're wanting to give them feedback about? If you haven't, if you've just kind of heard about it, you know, there's a rumor going around that so-and-so is doing this regularly and somebody needs to sort them out. You know, if that's the case, if it's just a rumor, then you need to be clear about that. You know, don't accuse them of something or, criticize them for something if you haven't, if you're not sure about it. You know, so there are different ways of doing this. You know, you could say, well, you know, I've heard that there's a bit of difficulty about this. Or if, you know, you have seen something, you say, well, yesterday I saw you doing such and such, and I'm just wondering about that. So, you know, finding ways that you actually speak about facts rather than just surmising, you know, making suppositions about what the person has done or what they might have been feeling. You know, sometimes people say, well, I could see you were really angry yesterday when you slammed the door. Well, it might have been that they were really angry, or it might have been just that the wind blew the door shut. Very funny story. Some years ago when I was leading a retreat with Sister Lucy from Turvey Abbey, and it was early morning, we were having the morning puja, and Sister Lucy was a bit late. And there was this terrific bang. And I thought, oh dear, Sister Lucy's really upset. And she slammed the door. It turned out it was when we had the Buntsfield explosion. I don't know if you remember, one of the oil tanks, sort of 9 miles away in Hemel Hempstead, exploded. And the whole building shook. And I thought it was Sister Lucy. Anyway, you know, how we can make assumptions about things, and how it's really important to check it out before you say something to somebody. So have I got my facts right? You know, is it that you were really angry, or was there an explosion 9 miles away that shook the building? I mean, why she would have been angry, I don't know, but anyway. So have I got my facts right? The Buddha also recommended speaking gently rather than harshly. You know, speaking, you know, in a calm, even way, clearly, rather than yelling at somebody. Because, of course, if you yell at somebody, immediately they're going to get, what's happened? They're going to feel upset, they're going to feel defensive. This isn't to say that you should never yell at somebody, like if a child is about to run out across the road in front of a car, you yell at them because you need to stop them. Sometimes it's appropriate to yell, but if you're wanting to have a conversation with somebody about something, then, you know, you speak in a calm, even way, gently, so that they can actually receive what you have to say. It's interesting that with cultural differences, like we have different cultures living together here, and you know, I come from a culture where we don't really express anger very much. You know, I was brought up never to express anger. So sometimes if I'm really angry, then I'll speak in, you know, I might say something to somebody. I remember saying something a little bit sharp to one of the monks, and afterwards I apologized. You know, I said, I'm really sorry, I was so upset with you, so angry. They didn't even notice. whereas, you know, people with a more expressive temperament from a different country, you know, they can yell and shout and have a tantrum, and I can be totally devastated by that because I'm not used to it. And, you know, it means nothing to them. You know, it's just they're just sort of expressing something that they're feeling. It's not that they're particularly angry, but they're just, you know, this is how they speak. And So we do have to take cultural differences into account. But the Buddha's recommendation is, you know, you speak calmly and gently in a way that the other person can receive it. And you also choose what you tell them. You know, you think about what's going to be useful for them to know. You know, you don't have to tell them every single thing about the particular incident, but just think, well, what can this person really make use of? What's going to be helpful to them? So I always find it very helpful having these ways of offering feedback. I mean, it's particularly useful for me because, as I said, I grew up not really learning. I didn't really know how to express anger. I didn't really know how to give people feedback. So in relation to what I'm talking about right now, the important thing is actually to wait till the anger has passed, and then to find a suitable situation, to find a place within yourself where you're actually wishing well for the person, and so on, as I already explained. So it's not that we just have to smile and make peace with everything. You know, when things are happening that, you know, are causing a lot of unhappiness or confusion to people, then it's important that if we, you know, are in a position of being able to do something about it, that we do something about it. In fact, Buddhism is, you know, it's not, I mean, people sometimes think that it's very passive, but actually it's not at all passive. It's learning how to act from the right place, from the right intention. So rather than acting in anger, we acknowledge the anger and we consider what is going to be a skillful response to this situation. You know, occasionally maybe we might have to pretend to be angry. Sometimes people can only hear it if it's expressed in a quite a forceful way. But that requires a lot of discernment. I talked about panya yesterday, discernment, the capacity to discern what's going to be appropriate in this situation. So it's not that we just go around blasting everybody, but we consider, how am I going to be able to put this across in this situation? So I don't want to talk very much longer. It would take me a long time, I think, to say everything I have to say about this. But just to recap a little bit, that, you know, all of us have the capacity for aggression, and that this really needs to be understood, and that right intention is not about not having these very natural energies, whether for aggression or you know, strong sexual desire or desire for some other kind of pleasure. You know, these things are normal, and as I said, it's part of the survival instinct. It's how human beings have survived. You know, if it wasn't for, you know, if sex wasn't pleasant, we wouldn't be here. And this whole thing of aggression, that this is just part of our nature. So it will arise, and however, rather than following it, right intention is the intention to, you know, to act or to speak from a place of kindness, a place of compassion, a place of renunciation or generosity. You know, these are all suitable. These are all skillful intentions. And if there's a, you know, if we notice within us sort of an intention of cruelty or hatred or lust, then these are, it's better not to follow these. There's a sutta that I often talk about because I think it's very, very useful teaching where the Buddha, it was actually before he was enlightened. He says he divided his kind of thoughts into two categories. And on the one hand, there was thoughts of, ill will, cruelty, and greed or lust. And on the other hand, thoughts of kindness, generosity, compassion, renunciation. And he likened it, and he said that, you know, on the one hand, greed department, that these are thoughts that cause confusion, cause harm, lead away from liberation, lead away from nibbana. Whereas kindness, compassion, generosity bring about a sense of well-being, bring about a sense of clarity. They lead us towards, they further our understanding and the liberation of the heart. And he said it's like a farmer who has cows. And in the autumn time, after all the crops have been gathered in, doesn't really matter where his cows go. They can kind of wander about. And all he needs to do is to kind of know vaguely where they are. And he says that's like the thoughts of kindness, compassion, generosity. You know, if you're experiencing those, you know, if those thoughts are in your mind, you just actually, you know, you're aware of them, and that's fine. They can just be there. Whereas the thoughts of ill will, cruelty, greed, it's like in the springtime when the crops are just beginning to grow, and particularly delicious for the cows. And if the cows wander at will, wherever they want at that time, you know, if they get out of the pen and start wandering around eating everybody's crops, the farmer's going to be in big trouble. And so at that time, he's always kind of, you know, keeping an eye on them and, you know, keeping them on quite a short rein, just sort of constantly watching them and keeping them in their place. And he said that's the attitude that we need, when we're experiencing thoughts of anger or ill will or desire, lust. You know, it's not that we shouldn't have them and we have to kind of get rid of them instantly, but we need to keep a careful watch on them. So an example that is, you know, I notice myself if I'm feeling irritable. You know, sometimes if I'm a bit tired or not feeling very well, you know, I can feel quite irritable, quite raw. You know, and hormones also have their effect. As I'm sure people can relate to that. You know, just times that you feel, you know, if anybody says anything to me, I'm going to do something really unfortunate. So, you know, if you recognize that, you know, if it's one of those days when you just feel off balance, or maybe somebody's been mean to you and you just kind of feel raw and vulnerable, then, you know, it's a time that you need to be really careful. So to consider, you know, take care of yourself. You know, sometimes, you know, if you have a choice, then maybe it's better just not to go out on those days. You know, just to avoid situations that you know are going to trigger those kind of responses. You know, living in community, you know, there are many things that we need to attend to and conversations, you know, that we have to have. And you know, sometimes I know I need to speak to that person about this difficult thing at some point, but sometimes I just know, well, it's not, today is not the day for this conversation. you know, today it's better if I just, if I can, to avoid getting into that situation. So this is part of actually just, you know, we have this expression, sati sampajanya, you know, mindfulness and clear comprehension. So, you know, there's a kind of circumspection. You know, we know, we're aware of the situation, and we're aware of, you know, how we are. And, you know, sometimes we, you know, we have to have the conversation. And so, you know, we at that, you know, if that's the case, then we know that we need to be very careful, very mindful. There's a story shortly before the Buddha died, and please don't take offense. I mean, you might take offense, but please try not to, because it's a very useful teaching, and it can apply to either gender. but the Venerable Ananda, who was very kind to women and to the nuns. In fact, it was because of him that the nuns' community came into being. He kind of interceded on their behalf with the Buddha. And one of his questions, I mean, it's difficult to believe that this actually happened, but anyway, this is what it says, that Venerable Ananda, just as the Buddha was dying, said, "Please, Lord, what are we to do about women?" And the Buddha said, "Don't see them, Ananda. Stay out of the way. But, Lord, what if we have to? What if we have, don't speak to them." Okay. So, "But Lord, what if we have to speak to them? What do we do if we have to speak to them?" "Be very mindful." And presumably he would have said the same to Mahaprajapati if she'd asked about men. So just the idea of, you know, recognizing situations that can be stimulating to us in different ways, and taking care if we need to be in such a situation. Just like a way of taking care of ourselves, so that, you know, we're aware of these energies, whatever they might be, whether for lust or anger or irritability, grumpiness, whatever it might be. We, you know, we're fully conscious of them. We don't think, you know, "Damn this anger, I shouldn't have it. You know, what's that?" But more, "Okay, right now I'm feeling a bit kind of shaky, a bit uncertain, there's a very strong emotion happening here, I need to be careful." So there's an attitude of kindliness. I hope that this has answered some of the questions that have arisen. And as I said, it's a topic that matters to me greatly, so it'll probably come up again in some talk or a question or answer session. Or, you know, maybe you'll find that there's enough to contemplate to help come to a clearer understanding of these very natural experiences that we have in this human realm with these human bodies and minds. So I offer this for your contemplation this evening.
Sadhu, 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 sadhu.